This is Ozarks at Large. Fred Hirsch is a remarkable musician. He's been nominated for 8 Grammy Awards, including this year for Best Instrumental Composition. He was honored with a 2003 Guggenheim Memorial Fellowship for Composition and a 2016 Doris Duke Performing Artists Award. He was playing classical music on the piano by age 4, composing by the time he was 10, and became interested in jazz when he was in college. Eventually, he graduated with honors from the New England Conservatory. He began recording in 1980 and recording as a band leader in 84. His life away from music, also something. He was diagnosed with HIV when he was 30 and is a vocal proponent for AIDS research and gay rights, donating time, concerts, and energy. In 2008, he developed an HIV-induced dementia, which left him in a coma for 2 months. He recovered and underwent extensive rehabilitation to regain the ability to play the piano. Friday night, he takes the Walton Arts Center stage with the Fred Hirsch Trio. Recently, Robert Ginsberg, the host of Shades of Jazz on KUAF each Friday night, talked with Fred Hirsch.
Your first excursions into music, as I understand it, was when you were quite young, and I gathered they included a sort of innate attraction towards the piano, and you had a piano in your house. Can you tell me a little bit about your memories of playing piano as a child?
It was there and I went to it. Wasn't anything that anybody pushed me to do. And so when my parents got married, they got a baby grand piano for the living room because that's sort of what people did back then. You know, every home had to have a piano. And I just went up to it and started picking out tunes, themes from cartoon shows, bits of records that I had on my kiddie record player. I started lessons very young, 4 or 5, you know, played primarily classical music up till about the age of 12 or so. But I was very interested in improvising. Even though the improvisations sounded like classical music, so I would improvise in the style of different classical composers. And starting around third grade to around sixth or seventh grade, I had private theory and composition lessons, and I did a lot of the kind of things that freshmen at conservatories do. Everything from four-part writing and counterpoint, score analysis, harmony, and composing in different styles. So that toolkit really is the only composition study I've really ever had. I mean, I've picked up a lot of stuff over the years from people, and I've tried a lot of things and learned from experience. But that was the basic toolkit that when I started to play jazz as a 18-year-old, that was the backbone of understanding, you know, harmony and chords and how that worked. And the main challenge as I started out as a jazz pianist in Cincinnati, Ohio, was, you know, to get my sense of rhythm together. That was the big difference. Between jazz and classical music is the rhythm.
Your desire from a very young age to not only mimic some things you heard that caught your ear, but also to improvise, that really is the grounding for composing, wouldn't you say? I'm kind of, I guess, reaching for that connection.
Well, if you look at jazz music as spontaneous composition, you would think, well, anybody who can play jazz should be able to compose well, but it's really not, it doesn't always follow. And it took me, I was well into my professional career, 23, 4 years old, playing with a lot of heavyweights in New York before I started to write my own tunes, because I thought, wow, you know, how am I going to write anything better than Wayne Shorter or Billy Strayhorn or Monk or Ornette Coleman or, you know, like, why bother? I'm really glad that I immersed myself in the canon, and I'm glad that I came through learning how to play jazz or from the oral tradition, from the older players, hanging out on the scene, learning tunes, being on the bandstand with no sheet music, just having to kind of know the stuff, having it transmitted in sometimes a tough love kind of way, but just sort of learning by doing.
We reach a certain age, and I think we look back to realize that we've created a history. In your case, that includes over 36 recordings as a leader and co-leader and a remarkable performance career. And I know there have been occasions in your life where it appeared your history might be cut short. I'm just wondering how your close encounters with mortality inform your perception of the future and perhaps your reflections of the past.
That's a big question. I mean, I've certainly had a lot of health challenges, including coming back from a two-month coma about 11 years ago. Certainly that affects you, not just mentally, but physically. A couple of years ago, I put out a memoir, Good Things Happen Slowly, in which I detail my struggles with my health, my identity, and also some of the what you might call triumphs of my career. I'll be 65 in October, and A, I'm lucky to be here, so there's certainly that. I never expected to be signing up for Medicare. Also thinking, well, you know, maybe I've got another 15 good years of this. What's the next act? You know, where is it going to go? And also realizing that I'm at a certain age and stature where inevitably I'm going to have to get out of the way of some of the players that are coming behind me. And that's as it should be. But I'm also getting to the stage of perhaps being looked at as some sort of a minor master at all this. So, you know, maybe if I keep going here, that reputation will solidify. We're at a tough time for acoustic jazz in our culture. I think that's just a product of the collapse of the record business and just the way music is being consumed right now. You know, we really depend on performing arts centers to anchor our touring possibilities. I do think that there's a value for everybody, and particularly for young people, to be able to go out and, as I said, put your phone down and just trust the artist to give you some kind of experience for an hour and 15 minutes, to learn how to listen deeply.
For your first performance in Northwest Arkansas at Walton Arts Center on January 31st, you'll be performing with your trio, and this is a long-standing trio, John Hebert on bass and Eric McPherson on the drums. Tell me about the dynamics of working with a group for a long time. I imagine that there are great advantages to this familiarity musically, but I also wonder if there's challenges with having too much familiarity.
I've been playing with John Hebert and Eric McPherson for more than 10 years now. We still try to challenge each other and, you know, never try to phone it in. You know, and as long as the situation is good and the instruments are good and sound is good, then we pretty much trust that some cool things will happen that haven't happened before. I mean, you can get a little too comfortable sometimes in the way that you approach a piece. And the challenge is to, you know, sometimes verbally communicate to another musician without telling them how to play or what to play or not play. Yeah, you can say, hey, you know, I think we're getting a little predictable here. Is there something else we can try, or is there something else I can do to make this more interesting? You know, it's a challenging thing, verbal communication, like in any relationship. You don't want to be controlling or directive, but, you know, it also, you want to keep the channels open so that it can continue to grow. But it is nice to have the feeling that we're going to give a really good performance, because there's just, you know, the experiences that we've had together are really going to show.
Fred Hirsch will be at the Walton Arts Center Star Theater Friday night beginning at 7:30. He talked with Robert Ginsberg, host of KUAF's Shades of Jazz, heard every Friday night at 10. You can find out more about the concert at waltonartscenter.org.